Family Room Podcast, where I, Peter Squires, get to know your friends and neighbors. My family, they never knew. My family, they never knew.
My family. Welcome to the Family Room Podcast, getting to know your friends and neighbors. I'm Peter Squires. My guest on this episode is sustainable community advocate Serena Galashaw. Serena is a member of the Envision Berwick Committee and former director of Seacoast Local. Serena and I discussed fruit, food sourcing, living where you grew up, the conservation and redevelopment of prime tanning in Berwick, psychogeography, and Wonder Woman, among other things. Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
Is this good?
Here we are.
Here we are.
It's happening.
Cool.
How are you doing?
Good. Yeah.
What's new?
Well, I'm really excited about this peach tree.
Yeah.
That is full of peaches. There's like hundreds of peaches. And I've been checking it for the past like month to see if they're ready, and they're finally ready. So I've been picking them, and it's great.
It seems to be that special silent guest appearance by Anne, who says, me too. yeah, I think it's that time of year where they're just like erupting all of a sudden.
Yeah.
There's just like an abundance of peaches everywhere.
It's best because there was no peaches last year because of early frost.
Oh, wow.
No. Early frost, wrong time of year. No, it was there was like a hailstorm, and it was like really cold in the spring, so all the flower, all like the buds, got ruined. So there were no peaches last year.
Yeah, it's like a double whammy.
Yeah,
crop.
Yeah,
I have one of my things that I'm sort of embarrassed about, and is also just kind of like a bummer in my life, is that I generally pretty much just like don't like fruit.
Hmm.
Like I don't like peaches.
You don't like peaches like when you pick a peach, a ripe, juicy peach.
Yeah, it's
off
gross
a tree
to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, like there's something wrong with me. I don't know what it is, but it's just like one of those things where it's like this thing that everyone else gets to enjoy.
Huh.
And I'm just like, yeah, no, that grosses me
out. What about berries?
Berries, like, so I like sort of like citrusy stuff, so like tart berries, like a cranberry, that doesn't bother me, but like a really fruity, juicy, like a strawberry, no thank you. And then bananas are the worst of the worst.
Bananas are not the greatest, but bananas, like real bananas, if you ever have them in any sort of tropical location,
yeah,
they're so good. They're so different than bananas that we get here.
Yeah, I guess I haven't had that. I've had plantains. I like plantains. But those are more starchy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just like the smell and the texture, it's all just like so gross to me.
Weird. What about apples?
Apples are fine.
Huh. Just like squishy. Is it a texture thing?
Partially. Mm. But it's also like in your describing of like the fresh, juicy peach, I'm like, ugh. It's like extra grosses me out. The like,
huh.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's the, like, there's, like, a level of aromaticness. But, no, that's not true, because I like oranges. I don't know. I can't explain it. It's weird, though. That's
but you like, do like citrus things.
Yeah.
This is fascinating. Are there any other weird flavors that you like or don't like?
No, not that come to mind. It's really generally fruit. But it's not all fruit, you know, but what I just described. And then there's stuff that I really like that I can't eat, like dairy and avocados all of a sudden.
Huh.
Yeah, I've been, for like a year, I was like, they keep sneaking dairy into my guacamole, you know? And it's like, oh no, it is the guacamole, you know?
Weird.
Yeah, it is.
Well, because a lot of people do put sour cream, actually, sometimes. Well,
I know, and I always ask, and they always say no.
Huh.
But yeah, avocado. Weird. Gives me the same reaction as lactose.
Weird.
Yeah.
I'm lactose intolerant, too.
Yeah.
It's a bummer.
Do you ever cheat?
I do it, yeah, with dairy pills.
No, like by eating dairy and just suffering the consequences.
Only with dairy pills, because it's like really not worth it for me.
Yeah. It shouldn't be worth it for me, but I still do it sometimes. And it's like,
I just have dairy pills on hand, like in everywhere.
Yeah.
Like in my car, in my house.
Do you find that they really work? Because I find that they just kind of like postpone.
They work for me, but I have to eat like 6 of them.
Yeah. Maybe that's the problem. I'm not eating enough. Are you a farmer?
I am a farmer a little bit, kind of. I don't want to take full credit for saying that I'm a farmer, because I definitely don't do that much work yet at farms. But yeah, I've been going to this, I've been part of this like working CSA farm for the last like 6 years. So it's actually really awesome. It was started by this guy named Bill, who retired from his like job in finance or something in Boston. And was like, I want to buy a tractor and a boat. And so he bought a little sailboat and a farm in North Berwick. And he started farming it with his kids. And the first 2 years, they just had way too much food. So they just like put it out on the side of the road, like for free. It was a little farm stand. And then he was like, this is crazy. Like, we can't keep doing this. Let's like invite the neighbors and like start a CSA. And this was like 15 or 17 years ago, like before CSAs were cool, especially in this area. And so he got the neighbors involved, and now there's like 25 or 23 families that are part of this. And so it's awesome. I pay for a single share, I pay $100 at the beginning of the season.
For the whole season?
For the whole season.
Wow.
And then you do like 2 hours of work a week. And so at the beginning of the season, it's just like weeding and helping like start things and plant things. And we have like a spring work day on a Saturday where like everyone and their kids comes, and we have a big potluck after and stuff. And the same in the fall to like do the final work. But during the week, you just show up whenever you want to. And then when it's harvest time, there's like a Monday group and a Friday group. And the Friday group is what I'm part of. So I go and the harvest takes like 2 hours at this time of year. So, that's that right there. And it goes until the frost, but we have our last like family farm pickup day on the first Saturday of October.
Wow. That sounds great. I mean, it's awesome. like the sort of co-op model of it, where mm-hmm. you're not paying for the food and for the labor, you're paying for the food and chipping in with labor.
Yeah. You know? It's awesome because I feel incomplete without it. Like I was in Burlington for a summer after graduating from college. And at the beginning of the summer, I wasn't part of any sort of CSA or anything. And I felt like so weird, just like having to go to the grocery store is like, something is not right.
Yeah.
So then I found a CSA up there, but yeah, there's something really special about being connected to your food in the summer, because it's so abundant and like, it's great to be part of that.
Yeah. I've never gotten a CSA share, but it's the kind of thing that I've always wanted to do, but that I've just sort of said like, yeah, I should do that this year. And then I just never do.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's also this nice, just like weekly reminder to eat your veggies. You know what I mean? Yeah. Here's a whole shitload of food for you to eat. Like do it, you know? And, I want to do that next year.
Yeah. With ours too, I've definitely learned how to like store food, which is a really awesome skill that I think everyone should know how to do. Like, whether it's like freezing food or like canning it, like it's just such a good practical skill. 'Cause we, in our short summer season, we get so many tomatoes and so much corn, and like, it's really useful to be able to, like, I always just roast a bunch of tomatoes with some garlic and salt and basil, and put it and like freeze it in little jars, so that in the middle of the winter I can have a taste of summer. And
that sounds really good.
It's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So is food like your thing, or are you just like, that's just one of the things that you enjoy? What do you do?
That's just one of the things that I enjoy. I mean, so I like I don't know. I am very frustrated by a lot of parts of our culture, and I feel like in every way that I live my life, I try to do it in a way that like is trying to figure out how to be more sustainable. Mm. And in college, I was like a little obsessive with that, went off like the deep end. Yeah. In a non-sustainable way, trying to be sustainable.
And like I think, non-emotionally sustainable.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And I think I've come around and just like made my daily work like things that are trying to help the world in bigger ways. So yeah, I like in my personal life too, I like to make sure I'm getting food from people that I know and like, you know, taking time to play and hang out and like be active and like work less and, all the things that like a happy, healthy culture like should be doing.
Yeah.
but it's hard sometimes.
Yeah. And, I feel like food is one of those things that is, like in a way, like we're as a whole sort of like the most detached from like, where does this come from? Like when you go to the grocery store, you're not thinking at all about like the journey that that food took to get to your mouth and sort of like what's in it for a lot of people. But it's also one of the easiest things to make that change about, like to get access to food that comes from where you are, you know, and to get access to food that's responsibly raised and that's simple and whole ingredients and stuff like that. Like it's a big thing, but it's a kind of an easy change to make, you know, to like find food that is sort of like thoughtfully consumed.
Yeah. I mean, it depends too, because like sometimes it is more expensive, and like a lot of the farmers markets these days are doing like SNAP benefits and like are actually rather competitive in their pricing. Mm. But yeah, it's, if you have the means, it's definitely an easy thing. It's like, if that's a choice you can make,
yeah,
that's an easy choice.
Yeah. And if you live somewhere where there are like farms, you know, then it's a lot easier to like get a CSA share for the season. And if you can like pay up front for something, you know, but it's something that I always, you know, like I was just saying, I wish I did more of, that I want to do more of. And it just takes that little bit of sort of like getting used to the like thoughtful planning of it, rather than just saying like, oh, fuck it. Like, here's what I want this week, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's cool. Did you grow up around here?
I did. I grew up in Somersworth, like a block from where I live right now.
Really?
Until I was like 10, and then I moved to Berwick right across the river, until I was like 23, and then I moved back to Somersworth. I mean, like with traveling and adventures and leaving for a couple of years at a time in between there. But yeah, I grew up in Somersworth and Berwick.
What's it like living where you grew up?
It's pretty awesome. It was kind of a choice, I guess, to stay there. And yeah, I don't know. After college, I did this program in the Bahamas at the Cape Luther Institute. And I was an experiential educator there, and everything on the campus was really intentional and like really heavy focus on sustainable systems. Like we composted like human waste. Wow. And we had a farm and an orchard and an aquaponic system that provided like fish and lettuce to the campus and stuff. And because you're on an island, like if something was broken, you wouldn't just be like, hey, there's a broken thing, and like expect someone else to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you would be late for lunch because you'd fix the broken thing.
Right.
And like, for some reason, like having a small microcosm of that was like showed me in a more real way, like, how our society here works in a way that I never really, like, had tangible.
Yeah.
And so when I moved back home, I just remember, like, my mom literally picking me up at, like, the CNJ station and driving back and like, looking at the buildings and, like, realizing for the first time that, like, someone had built these buildings. Mm. Like, someone had put these bricks here and, like, decided to make these streets where they are. And, like, I don't know, for some reason, like, it's obvious that, of course, people made these buildings and put these streets here, but, like, you don't really think about it in a way, like when you're living in a place that has been there for so long, you kind of just assume that you are, that everything already happened and you're not, like, part of creating it.
That everything that existed before you, like, saw it be built, it has just always been there.
Yeah.
There's this, like, timelessness to history.
Yeah.
You know?
And, like, it's not. And we can change it.
Yeah.
Like, immediately. And so I think I just had this revelation. And then I started serendipitously the Prime Tanning spot in downtown Berwick, which is, like, 11 acres of old leather tannery. There was a couple of people in town who wanted to make moves to try and get that something happening with that and, like, figure out what to do with it. So I started going to those meetings, and we, the stars aligned, and this group of people was able to meet, like, every week at, like, 3:30 in the afternoon for a year. I don't know how that that happened, but we started making some serious progress, and we did this really awesome community engagement campaign and got people really, like, interested and invested. And we applied for some brownfield funding, and, like, now it's 4 years later and we got $1.2 million in brownfield funds. We started, like, a farmer's market in the winter. We started, there's, like, a trails committee and a riverfront committee that, like, started a boat launch. And, like, we did a community mural with the art association in town and, like, with over 100 people that did a paint by number style mural on the thing. And, like, all the process is almost over in terms of the environmental cleanup. So, like, they knocked down probably, like, 70% of the buildings that were there and, like treated the soil and stuff. So it looks drastically different.
Wow.
All of a sudden.
So it was just like, so it was just this property that was sitting there doing nothing. Abandoned.
Yeah, it was just abandoned since 2008.
Wow.
But at its peak, I mean, it employed like 500 people.
Yeah.
Or 800 people, maybe. Hundreds of people. Yeah. So, I mean, it was a big economic engine for the town for a long time. And it had been there since like hundreds of years. So it had been like building that had just been building up on top of each other. So it's like this giant sprawling campus of leather tanning.
And so now it's just nature.
Well, no. So now is like the tricky part where the town has laid out a vision plan for what they want to have happen. They've updated like zoning and coding to reflect the type of development that they would like to see. But it kind of depends on the developer and the landowner in terms of what's going to go there. But the town has identified that like missing middle housing is a thing that Berwick needs more of, like apartments for younger people is a thing that Berwick needs more of. Like they want to be a aging in place community, where, you know, like elderly people are able to like be part of the community and like walk downtown and like, I don't know, they've outlined a whole bunch of goals on that topic. And then, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of space there. It's the size of 9 football fields. So wow. There's a lot of cool things that could potentially happen there.
Wow.
So yeah, we'll see. We're kind of in the wait and see phase and like, yeah.
I feel like that there's so many questions that I want to ask you. I want to like go back to like the island life thing.
Yeah.
And then it's a, it's an interesting and direct sort of corollary to like living in a small town where essentially where you grew up, to be able to say like, this is my island, mm-hmm. you know, and this is how I can, you know, treat living here the way that I treated living in a place where there wasn't some other mysterious invisible person who was going to fix the toilet or
yeah.
decide where the street went or whatever.
Yeah.
But I do think that island living and just in general, like seeing things in person is such a different way of learning from like conceptually understanding something.
Yeah.
You know, you can totally. Conceptually understand something to be true, but it doesn't have anywhere near the same like emotional impact and like this changes the way I think about things mm-hmm. impact as actually seeing it. You know, my wife and I did this big trip for 3 months, where we basically like traveled around the world, and it gave me such an eye-opening perspective on time. Like, we got to go to Egypt and like see the pyramids and the wow. ancient temples cool. and just like, these things are still standing here after thousands of years.
Yeah.
And then you come back to the US and it's like, you know, my old house in Elliott, 200 years old. And it's like, to me, that seemed like impossibly old. And like the yeah. oldest thing that we have is 400 years old. You know what I
yeah.
mean? And it's just like, oh, that's actually not that much. And like, why would you build everything out of wood? know? like, yeah. And just, but that like, I could read those years and say BC versus AD and be like, oh yeah, like I know the difference between those two things, but then actually seeing them and being there and being like, holy shit, like you to touch it and feel it and be there is such a different, gives you such a different kind of understanding.
Yeah.
So like the island living thing, it's like you're actually experiencing the
limits.
Yeah, exactly.
and the resources that it takes to do things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it makes you appreciate like when you're just walking around a place that where everything's working well, you know, it's like, wow, that took a lot of work,
mm-hmm.
you know, and continues to, you know, like, people have to be constantly maintaining buildings and infrastructure and communities and relationships. And, you know, that you can't just like sit stagnant. You mm-hmm. got to keep building and fixing.
Yeah, totally.
So then what's your role now with the Tannery Project?
I think I'm going to be on the committee again, the Envision Borough Committee in the fall. But yeah, it's kind of cool. I started working at an urban design and development firm because of that experience, that I did in Berwick. So I do that kind of stuff for work now too.
Cool.
So I help other communities do visioning efforts and like, yeah, it's kind of fun.
Had you done anything like that before?
Like before Berwick?
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, because I was fresh out of college and a post-college adventure, so I had pretty much been in school before that, and our schools are notoriously bad at project-based learning.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's changing, but yeah, I had taken a class in, so I studied environmental studies at college, but
where did
I,
you go to college?
Clark University in Worcester, Mass.
Yeah.
But I had taken this one class, I don't know why, like, I guess no one had ever suggested urban planning to me as like a thing that I could do. And so I didn't think about it that way. And I was still also focused on figuring out all the problems in the world as related to the environment and society. Yeah. So I was just like really zoned in on taking all the classes I wanted that were really depressing.
I also think that like, just in terms of like where the words sit in my mind, like environment and urban seem like opposites.
Yeah.
But in fact, like they're things that interact all the time. Like
yeah.
urban planning, I'm thinking of New York City and like I'm not thinking of Berwick, yeah. You know, but it applies to everywhere.
Yeah. Rural planning is a thing too. Yeah. Yeah. But I took this class called psychogeography, mm-hmm. and it was a study of like how like our psychologies are like influenced by geography. So it was cool because, I was living in Worcester and like Worcester is an interesting place. I love it after living there for 4 years, but, you know, there's a lot of brutalist architecture. There's a lot of falling down buildings.
Yeah.
There's a lot of forgotten about places. And there's a lot of cars. It's not like, yeah, it's a pretty like smoggy car filled city.
Rugged.
Yeah. Gritty. Yeah. So it was interesting to have that class. We would like walk around and just like go where we wanted to go and like kind of dissected what makes a place an interesting place and like why we feel comfortable in some places and not others. And, it was like one of my favorite classes. Mm. And I think that was my first introduction to the idea of like placemaking and being able to shape cities in a more humane, like human way.
Yeah. So how has that impacted like the work that you do now and the when you first like signed on to the Berwick project?
Well, I guess just being aware of the fact that like certain places are interesting and like you want to be there because like there's benches to sit on mm-hmm. and like trees nearby and like just like knowing the little ingredients that make up like places that people love.
Yeah.
Is an interesting thing that can get you very far. And knowing that like spaces need to be activated and like certain plazas have been built and like nobody feels comfortable in them because they're too big or they're too small or they're like humans have very specific, like almost like biologically based things, like how parking garages are scary and like giant parking lots are kind of scary, especially at night. Like all these things are based in like human behavior and like the things that we like and don't like. And I think a lot of urban design has been like trying to make a point, like with brutalist architecture, and like it just kind of goes against the grain of what humans like want.
Like that it's about the sort of like emotionless efficiency.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
So I think just being aware of those things makes you able to like understand what would be nice.
Yeah. And that there's this like, especially in the sort of like crazy hyper speed technology era right now in the sort of like digital age, gathering places are really, really important. And like having physical places where communities exist together and human beings can like be outside, it like sounds like something that we would take for granted, but it's actually like, no, it's super imperative that we don't forget about that.
Yeah. You know? It's super imperative. And especially having things to do, especially in New England, like all four seasons, like having ice rinks is really important. Like I was in Prescott Park yesterday and I overheard some women, talking about like just how great this garden was and like how awesome it was and how across the street they do the Puddle Dog Pond in the winter and have ice skating. And they're like, oh, so New England. So New England. That's awesome. And, but like, it's true because we need things to do in the winter because it lasts for most of the year. So like, I think forgetting about that in the design of our communities is like a huge mistake.
Yeah. Because the alternative is, I guess I'll just stay inside for 6 months. You know? Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But it's true. I mean, that's the thing about like those, that simple little checklist of things that feel good to humans.
Is yeah. Like,
it's interesting. I'm kind of like, what's the rest of the list? Like benches and what did you mean when you said like an activated space.
So like, for instance, right now in downtown Berwick, part of it, where they tore down a few buildings, they just like threw some grass and like clover seed down. So mm-hmm. there's just like kind of a scrappy looking little like field in front, which actually looks awesome considering that it was like falling down buildings before. But still it's like a green space. That's kind of like no one goes there.
It's just a lawn.
But it's like not even a, like a nice lawn. So like you don't want to go sit on it.
Yeah.
So it's just like this space that has plants growing on it, which is good because it's serving a purpose, yeah. you know, soaking up water and like, hopefully there's worms in the soil, like starting to move it around. But it's not a place that you would like go to hang out.
Right.
So like you could activate it by in the winter, the past 2 years, they've done a ice rink there. That's a way to activate it. You could like have a spontaneous concert or like throw a picnic table in there or something.
Yeah.
Those types of things to like get people used to the idea of going to a spot. Cause again, yeah. like we're really like creatures that function out of convenience and like patterned behavior. So yeah. like if you're not used to going to a place, you won't go to a place.
Right.
But then if there's something that makes you stop and like do something outside of your pattern, like you'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's when I was in college, I was on the like buildings and grounds committee.
What did you do?
I don't even know why. I think it was like I had some other role, and as part of that role, I don't even know why that was the case. Anyway, one of the things we had to do was we had to, someone had like left an endowment of $1 gazillion to the college, but one of the conditions of it was that they had to add new benches to the campus every year. And they had these really nice benches, and it was beautiful campus, and it was just like a great thing that I loved about the campus. But it had reached the point where we were like, we don't know where the hell to put more. Like, there's so many benches that we would like run out of places for it. So we would joke about like lining them up behind each other like a school bus, you know, or putting them on the roof of the buildings, you know, have benches facing each other.
That's really funny. Yeah.
And like that was 15 years ago. So who knows?
Oh my
like,
gosh. What college?
Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York.
I mean, could you put them off campus? Because that would be an easy solution.
That would be amazing. I mean, honestly, like, that would be great. I wonder.
Yeah. A way to connect the campus to the real world.
Yeah. Just have like benches lining the road to the school all the way, like throughout the city. Just Poughkeepsie, the city of sitting people.
The city of benches.
Yeah. So, and you also did Seacoast Local was yours
yeah.
for a while, right?
Yeah. That was, well, whenever that was, 2013 to 2015, maybe. So yeah, that was actually really fun and awesome because, it was another thing that kept me here, I guess. Like when I was like, okay, cool. I'm doing this Berwick stuff and like, working at a couple other jobs. And then Seacoast Local was awesome because I just got to know all these business owners, awesome local business owners, all around the whole Seacoast. So I would just spend my day like doing some work and then driving around and like chatting people up, like in Portsmouth and Dover and Rochester. So it was really fun. I felt like I had an instant community from just like chatting with people about things that they cared about.
Yeah. What does the organization do?
So Seacoast Local is a nonprofit that aims to like connect local business owners to each other and like focus on best practices that can make our local economy stronger and also educate the community about why buying local matters and supporting independent business owners matters. Much more money comes back into our local economy when we support local business owners because, like, for instance, you don't ask, like, Walmart to donate to the Girl Scouts.
Right.
Like, you ask, like, Gus and Ruby
right.
or, like, someone
yeah.
in downtown, any of the downtowns. And I think this area is like particularly unique because we almost function as a city. Like all of these, I think there's like 24 towns identified in like the Seacoast local, yeah. like, kind of like Seacoast, New Hampshire, Maine situation. And like, I think the last time I was paying attention, it was probably like 200,000 people in that span of towns.
Yeah.
And so we're like a small city,
yeah.
just kind of spread out. And so we have all these unique little downtowns that are like really awesome. And it's like why everyone lives here. Cause we love that. It's like interesting. You can go hang out in Dover or Rochester or Portsmouth or Somersworth. And it's like different and interesting. So yeah, there's this education component that I think, was really interesting, especially at its time. Like I think Seacoast Local is one of the first nonprofit organizations to be part of the Buy Local movement when it started. I don't remember when it started now, maybe 2006 or something. So it was one of the first models like in the US that was teaching people about why it was important to buy local.
Yeah.
And I think by the time I was working there, people had pretty much like understood the buy local message and they were starting to get into it. And like buying local food had become like the thing that people like, really got behind easily. And they were still aware that like buying local other things was important, but there's still like, I feel like endless education and, we weren't a 501. We weren't the other one, so we couldn't do advocacy, but like there are groups doing advocacy work for it. So yeah.
That's cool. Awesome. I think I've always thought of the Seacoast as a city and that like downtown Portsmouth is kind of the capital of the Seacoast.
Yeah.
You know? but I'm glad that so it was my intention when I moved up here to move to Portsmouth. And I couldn't afford it and, ended up living in Elliott. And I'm really glad that I didn't live in Portsmouth. Cause I feel like the Portsmouth mentality, it's like people Portsmouth who live in centric. Portsmouth don't leave Portsmouth yeah. and go check out the other towns around totally. It. And I'm glad that I didn't live in Portsmouth just for the sake of getting to know the other towns better. Yes. And then you still get to enjoy Portsmouth just as much as they do. But you get to enjoy the other stuff too.
Yeah. You know? I was literally just talking about this with someone yesterday. Cause like from my house, from the top of the hill that I live on in Somersworth, I can see Mount Agamenticus and Portsmouth. Like That's I awesome. Can literally see the entire Seacoast from That's my beautiful. House. And, there's something about that perspective. Like yeah. if you live in Portsmouth, you don't go explore Somersworth. You don't go explore Rochester. And it's like, oh my God, I have to drive 25 minutes. Like,
yeah.
no, like you come to meet me. And it's like everyone outside of Portsmouth drives very far to go do yeah. everything. And it's worth it, I yeah. guess, because we're still here. And it's like, we get to explore all of these like interesting little towns and like woods and swimming holes mm-hmm. and rivers and like, there's definitely something to be said for that.
Totally. So we got married in December, but we had like the world's tiniest wedding. It was like in this room. but we're having a party this month just for our like out of town friends and family who we didn't get to celebrate with. And it's still like the most low maintenance, low key thing ever. Like we're having yeah. a picnic at Fort Foster and
nice.
Hanging out at night at Lobster in the Rough in New York.
Nice.
But as I'm like, I decided to like draw a little map and explain to the people who are coming, like explain our area. Cause yeah. most of them are coming from New York and they just kind of like are used to a different, you know, being able to take Ubers or subways everywhere. And I was yeah. like, you should have a car and everything is 25 minutes away from everything else, but it's all great.
Yeah. You know,
like everything that we love here is 25 minutes away from the other things we love here. But like you just drive 25 minutes and that's how everything works here.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're willing to do that, then you can enjoy so much different, great stuff.
Yeah. yeah. There's a lot of diversity. Although we do have Uber and Lyft these days.
I know. I've never I've never used it here because I live here and I have a car, but you're right. We do.
Yeah. A woman, in Somersworth who, she posts on Facebook, she's an Uber driver, and she posts on Facebook the greatest stories about driving people around. And yeah, apparently a lot of people use it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so that was like a big fight for a little while and then it just
in Portsmouth,
disappeared.
I think.
Just Portsmouth?
Yeah,
though?
I think that was just Portsmouth.
Huh. They're so persnickety.
Yeah, I don't know. Uh-huh. I will... No comment.
That's good. Yeah, maybe I should open my mind to...
We love you, Portsmouth.
Yeah. I just joined the board of ArtSpeak.
Cool.
And I'm like, am I going to have to like not shit on Portsmouth anymore? You know? Because like... I really like Portsmouth. It's totally like the reason that I moved to the area, but I also like am frustrated with it, you know? So maybe it'll be my opportunity to,
yeah, well, just
to point that in a effective
productive
direction.
Way.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want it to be more colorful, you know? And, I mean, I guess this is the right way to engage with that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, and that's another one of those things that makes a place attractive to,
yeah,
to people,
yeah,
you know, seeing art around. And even like art isn't always what you think. It's not like a painting in a museum. It's like a statue,
mm-hmm,
or a beautiful building, or, you know, just having like aesthetic charm matters,
mm-hmm,
you know? So the brutalism of like a big cube parking lot in the middle of a city, it's like, ugh, it doesn't do anything for you, you know.
Yeah.
But seeing a colorful building or, you know,
plants,
something else interesting, yeah, plants, it makes you want to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an eye-opening thing coming back from our trip and feeling like the rest of the world is just so much more colorful.
Yeah.
And then you like land in Boston and you drive back up here and it's just so gray.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think that's a lot of like northern climates, cities are more gray.
Yeah.
Like I remember thinking that when I was in like Rome,
hmm,
and being like, I love this city. It's so colorful. Everything's awesome. And then like also like in the Caribbean, everything is like super colorful, mm-hmm, and pastel and bright. But like more northern cities are just like everyone wears more black and gray. And like,
yeah,
I don't know. And like, it's like no one wants to stand out too much in the winter. Like,
yeah. And like we're just trying to survive.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you'd think that would be more colorful because it's like, the color has to come from somewhere, you know, if like the whole world is like coated in white and like gray, brown slush,
yeah,
then like, let's wear our hot pink winter parka, you know,
yeah,
just to like be the little bit of color for,
yeah,
each other, you know. It's just hard to do, but yeah, we had that. We went to Puerto Rico a couple of years ago during the like super shitty cold winter, which is I guess like every winter, and that was like a big realization, was just how much it wasn't just about the temperature, that escape, but actually like seeing colors and hearing birds and bugs and stuff chirping at night, and you're like, oh right, like everything's alive, you,
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
I forgot how that feels.
Yeah.
You know? I love the fall and I'm excited that it's starting to cool down, but also like I have this like, I always have this kind of like dread about the winter. Recognizing how little time we have when we can like really be outside and enjoy the liveliness and the color and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I feel you. I have more of like this like intense nostalgia that makes me like feel nauseous almost at this time of year that I don't know where it comes from. But I love the winter because I ski and I cross country ski.
That's cool.
So I really feel like winter activities really make everything so much better.
Yeah, I need to probably get into something like that.
And you guys have that nice sunroom over there.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be really nice in the winter.
Yeah, it's pretty cold. But, yeah, there's a heater out there that we haven't really used that much. But we're still like, learning this house.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, I feel like that's another really easy thing that we could be implementing in our community designs and building designs is like just complete utilization of sun and southern exposure, everything, because we do spend so much time in winter and it's really important to feel warm and have sun. And like, it's also not impossible. We just need to stop building houses like they are blind to the sun.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Or that they're blocking the sun from us or protecting us from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that like we need it.
Mm-hmm.
We're all a bunch of little Supermans and we're powered by the sun.
Yeah, totally.
So you mentioned a couple of times your like, your adventures elsewhere. Like mm-hmm. what were they?
I don't know. I really like adventures. So I go on a lot of micro adventures just like around here and like paddle boarding. I did this thing a couple summers ago where I tried to paddle the entire coastline of the Seacoast, like up into the rivers, like where they're tidal. So I went like, I did like half of it or a little more than half of it. I still have to get to the name of the river that goes into Exeter. I didn't do that one. And I haven't gone around all the little nooks and crannies of Little Bay. But I've gone from South Berwick to Elliott and from Elliott to Portsmouth. And then from downtown Dover to Elliott. And then from Newmarket out into the bay. And then from Dover. I'm forgetting the name of all the rivers right now. On the other side of the highway, on like the west side of 16.
Oyster River?
No, not. I think it starts with a B. Oh my gosh, I'm forgetting all the names.
I only know the Piscataqua and the Oyster River.
There's so many rivers.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've done that. When I was in college, I did my study abroad in the Turks and Caicos.
Cool.
On a very small island called South Caicos, which is, by the way, accepting donations for hurricane relief.
Yeah.
Did
they get hit real bad?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
They still haven't like fully communicated. I've only seen a couple of photos from people that were there. But yeah, really sad. It was an amazing place to study abroad. I was doing marine resource management and marine ecology. So our tests were literally like we would go snorkeling and our instructor would dive down and like have a ruler, like a yardstick,
yeah,
and like point, like swim down and point to a fish, and we'd have to like write down what its Latin name was like on these waterproof
that's
slates.
Awesome. That's yeah. So cool.
Yeah, it's really awesome. It was amazing. And then I taught marine ecology and did some like leadership stuff at Catalina Island camps and on Catalina Island off the coast of Los Angeles for a summer, which was really awesome. I spent a lot of time like free diving in the kelp forests, which was like so beautiful and like the most fun thing. I think it's like definitely up there in like top 10 most fun activities. It's like diving in kelp forests because you feel like a seal. And there's these like rooms, like you dive down and then you're in this like room of kelp because it's just like 20 feet tall. It's so amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And then after college, I was in Vermont for a summer and then in the Bahamas for that internship. Yeah. And now these days I've been going on a lot of winter adventures, getting into backcountry skiing and stuff. So yeah.
That's awesome. Where do you do that around here?
Well, I spend a lot of time in Vermont with friends in the winter. So I'm doing a lot of that, but around here, people definitely backcountry at Mount Agamenticus and like any other slope that you can find. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, like there's this tiny little ski hill in South Berwick.
Yeah, I love Powder House.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
I've never been there, but I like driving by it. It's just like, wee.
Yeah. It's great. It's a lot of fun. I learned to snowboard because I've been skiing since I was like 4, and I learned to snowboard like in college. And so when I would come home on winter breaks, I would go there and just do laps, like teaching myself how to snowboard.
That's awesome.
It's fun. It's like $5. It's worth it.
I remember this huge snowstorm when I was living in Brooklyn. And my friends and I decided to like trudge our way up to Prospect Park. And we had this, for some reason, we had this like skateboard deck with no wheels on it. Mm-hmm. And so we were just like sledding on it down the hill. And then we see this sort of like figure emerging from the distance. And it's like in New York, it's not like here where like you see people you know all the time.
Yeah.
Like if you see someone you know, you're like, weird, I know that person, you know? And it was our friend Jesse, and he was on a snowboard being pulled by his dog. It was just such an unforgettable image of like a big, like 100-plus pound dog.
Wow.
You know, and it was just like, you guys were made for this moment.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So then what were the factors that were sort of like, made you make that sort of intentional decision, having been like on these other adventures in other places, to come back to where you grew up?
Well, I guess after the Bahamas, I just kind of like, I had felt like I was just running for a long time, like just like through college and everything. And so I just wanted to like come home and chill for a bit. But then I met this awesome group of people, that I had gone to elementary school with, who are affectionately known in Summersworth as the Hill Kids. I don't know if you talked about that with Lincoln.
No.
But yeah, there was just a bunch of us that happened to be there, after college or intentionally or whatever. And so Emmett, started Teetotaler, mm-hmm. and we all just kind of like met up there because it was the only place with like internet access downtown besides the library. So it was just fun. There was like a new group of people that were doing fun things, and it just kind of made sense to stay home. And we were like building stuff and doing exciting things. Mm. So
it's nice to see people you knew as kids become adults that you admire.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
Like you've known each other like when there was nothing, when it was just playing and being silly and being kids. And then you're like, oh wow, like you turned out awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
It's a nice feeling. I have a fair amount of friends from like, I guess when I was 10 and older. Most of my friends are from high school and then from like after college. Last Thanksgiving, I went out, so I lived in this one town called Manhasset till I was 9, and then moved to the town next door, Port Washington, from 10 and after. And I kind of like lost touch with my Manhasset friends, but, Facebook is a thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I became Facebook friends with a lot of them. And it's funny cause like you lose touch with people for like 15, 20 years and then you see each other and it's like, oh yeah, I totally know you. But I hadn't like seen them and hung out with them in a long time. So I was home for Thanksgiving and I just like thoughtlessly was like, is anyone else in Port Washington for Thanksgiving?
And yeah.
They were like, you can come hang out with the Manhasset kids if you want. And I was like, okay. So like one hung out with my friends like from nursery school.
Oh my gosh.
I hadn't seen in 25 years.
Wow.
And we went bowling and it was really fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But it's weird because it's like some people, like they've all been friends the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, so they're like, oh, he kind of like went Republican and he kind of like, you know, like to see the different directions that people went, you know,
it's funny.
But they're all still have the same faces and the same names as when you knew them then. You
know?
So it's a fun adventure growing up.
Totally.
Yeah. So I'll start doing kind of the like wrap it up, lightning round kind of.
Okay, cool.
Quick answer questions.
Okay.
What are you afraid of?
Presently, waves over 4.5 feet.
Yeah.
As I'm trying to surf.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah. Water is extremely powerful, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like something that is vital and something that you can enjoy, but it's also like, it must be respected.
Yeah. You know?
It's like,
it's funny. I'm more scared of the ocean after becoming a surfer than I ever was like being a lifeguard at the ocean.
What changed?
I think because I have this giant floaty thing attached to my ankle that like pulls me around in all these weird directions that like doesn't happen if you're just swimming.
That's interesting that like you would think having the floaty thing attached to you would make you feel more secure, but it's the dragging you around part.
Yeah. And it can also like hit you and bruise you. I had this giant bruise on my elbow.
Oof.
Yeah. It's kind of a scary sport. Like maybe like it's not an irrational fear.
No, totally. It's a completely irrational fear.
Yeah.
It's probably a way more rational fear than like, I don't know, sharks or spiders or whatever. Those sharks are also in the ocean. what would your last meal be?
I mean, hopefully something delicious.
Well, yeah, what?
I don't know. Hopefully something delicious in that, like, I was eating with other people and maybe... I don't know. I'm not a very picky eater. So as long as it had like some sort of like garlicky, oniony flavor, I'd be down with it.
All right. Where did you think you'd be now?
Huh. I'm not one of those people that like plans everything out. It's like I just always wanted to be happy, and I'm pretty happy, so...
So you're there.
I'm there.
I thought I would be at happy.
Yeah.
What's something, like a book or a movie or a podcast or something that you've, like, taken in lately that has been... that's really connected?
I guess I'm not one to ever go to the movies and I'm not one to like be aware of pop culture. Mm-hmm. Like I'm the worst person for trivia. Don't ever have me on your trivia team. But I saw Wonder Woman and then I saw it again because it was so much fun to just like, I forget there's a word for it when your brain mimics what's going on. Like when you watch someone dancing, your brain and like your body can like feel the dancing.
Hmm.
There's a, I think it's called mirroring or like neuron mirroring maybe. Hmm. And like that happened for me in the whole movie. So I was like, it was fun. And then it was also like, this is what every dude feels watching every movie with every male superhero. Like it's fun for them because they can physically feel what it would be like to be kicking ass.
Yeah.
And like women don't get that like hardly as often. And it was just so fun to just watch it. And like, I had to go like run around the parking lot afterwards. I had so much adrenaline.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, something that I've definitely taken for granted as a dude, you know, that like, that's the fun of watching like a Rocky movie is after the movie's over, you're just like,
because you can picture yourself doing those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that, I mean, and that movie was awesome. Like as a dude, it was awesome also, you know? But that the whole representation thing, like that's, it's not just a concept. It's a, you can feel.
Yeah. It's real. It's like physical and tangible. Yeah.
That's cool to hear. Okay, so this is always my final question. If you could do one thing every day forever, what would it be?
Whoa. I'm having competing...
Well, you can say two things.
Competing activities in my head right now. Like, I would want to be skiing and surfing and just laying in the sun and not doing anything. Huh. All at the same time.
I think there's enough time in the day to do all of those things, though. I guess you can surf during the winter, right?
Yeah.
Do you do that?
Yeah. In really thick wetsuits. That adds to the
right.
situation. Because I'm like super buoyant. I have a hood on. I can't hear things properly. Yeah. I'm still... It's a love-hate relationship.
Yeah. But the fear doesn't make you not want to do it.
Only sometimes. Like, I don't go out when it's big because I'm too scared. But when it's like 3 to 5 feet, I'll go out and just be really scared the whole time, but I'll be out there.
So what's your like ideal comfort zone right now in that
like
regard?
Like 3 feet, 3.5 feet, like in surfer terms, like waist to shoulder high is like great.
Mm.
I love that. And also like the period is big. So like the waves are far apart and not like smushed together.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. You can do those things. You do those things. Yeah. It sounds like.
Yeah.
I always like it when people answer with something that they're already doing.
It's like,
oh, well then. You're living the dream.
You know? Yeah, totally. I guess the one thing that I would do that I don't do every day and that like is physically impossible, I think, because sometimes it's cloudy, is like I would like to sit in the sun every day for like 20 minutes. Yeah. That'd be great.
Well, you make a good point about like the ability to, that you do have the ability to do that all year round, you know, aside from cloudy days, but like that it's an important reminder as winter approaches that like you don't have to hunker down only. You can also still be out there and enjoying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need that reminder at least.
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you for coming over.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This is really fun.
Good. My family.